Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the podcast. And for a very special episode this week, welcome Amari back to the show, everybody. Give it up for Amari, everybody.
Amari.
Hey.
How you doing, Amari? And the driver of the mystery machine in the art. How's it going?
It's good. Thank you for having me back. I'm really excited to be back on this podcast, but also to be talking about a horror movie because it's my favorite. It feels good.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been like doing a deep dive this month, right? You've watched like how many horror movies in the last 30 days?
We do a 31 for 31. So we got a little derailed because we had a trip to San Francisco shoehorned in there towards the middle of the month. So it kind of like threw our track off, but we hit like 25 horror movies this month. So
that's pretty good.
It's a good month.
And, you know, we'll get into it, but we'll come back around when we talk about Audition. We'll see where that kind of ranks in the lineup for the month. Also, we have Gideon joining us this week. Gideon, what's going on, man?
Yeah, so last night we had a showing at our local church for Nosferatu. It was free. This dude played on the organ. It was so awesome. It was such a cool way to experience that for a first-time watch. So super jazzed about that. I just re-upped on my Game Pass. I'm checking out Black Ops 6. things are good, dude. I'm just hanging out, having fun.
Yeah, is Black Ops 6 totally sweet?
It's pretty good, but it's definitely making me feel like an old man. Just like these kids are just cracked out, doing flips and spinning around, and all the clips I'm seeing, I'm just like, oh my god. And there's so many menus and so much customization. I'm like, I remember when Nuketown was a new map, you know?
You know, Gideon, what you're saying reminds me of, so we just got out of seeing the Wild Robot, and whenever we're out in public and Grace isn't looking at me, I try to, like, do, like, funny things behind her back while she isn't noticing. Just in the, because she has, like, eyes in the back of her head and can kind of tell, like, if I'm being, like, goofy behind her. So I like to do, like, the floss, like, the Fortnite floss. So she was, like, turned around picking up her purse, like, getting her popcorn off the seat or whatever when we were trying to leave, and I was like doing the floss behind her, and some 8-year-old kid was like, oh. so connecting with the youths in that way. So awesome.
I watched a little TikTok that someone made where they put a jigsaw skin on a Fortnite character and had them like doing just hunty jigsaw. It was wonderful. So the kids might be all right.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You know, I kind of think that I have that same thought, Amari. Whenever I see Zoomers making TikToks that is ridiculing millennial humor, like when they're dressed up like a millennial, and then they're doing like parodies of internet videos from like 2005 to 2010, I think that shit is so funny. That really gives me like faith in the next generation. Like that's great. Last but certainly not least, Neil, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for welcoming me, Sam. I didn't realize I'd been gone.
What did I say?
I don't know. It feels weird to be welcomed.
No. You're always welcome here. I'm actually, I say it as a kind of relief. I wasn't sure you were going to survive this particular movie, so I'm just glad that you're joining us tonight.
See, Gideon, I was interpreting this as like, this is Sam's way of telling us that he's like, bought out whatever controlling shares we have in the podcast, and he's just like, going freelance with us. We're not paid staff anymore. We're like contract writers.
Yeah. Guys, I am so in the red on this podcast. It is not even funny. So it is not, whatever shareholders are going to jump in are going to take one look at the books and be out on this thing immediately. Oh my God. Anyway. Yeah. My financials are in ruin. Anyway. Sorry, Neil, I didn't check in. How is you said you had a rough week at work. Otherwise, how are things going?
Yeah. The same kind of, complaints I've had for the past few weeks, but
mm-hmm.
I'm moving forward on it. I asked some people for letters of recommendation, and I'm working on my resume and all that kind of stuff. So
okay.
Hopefully things will be better sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the sun will come out tomorrow. Bottom dollar that tomorrow there will be sun.
I wouldn't bet my bottom dollar on that.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay.
We're making progress.
All right. Well, sounds good. We'll keep checking up on the job hunt as things progress. Hopefully we have some news on that soon. I'll just check in real quick. Last week, full week of work before I go to Japan, so that's really cool. Just got back from seeing the Wild Robot, which was totally awesome. And if you guys get the chance to go see the Wild Robot, go see it. It was sick. Although I had a very sad moment this week. The weather was bad, and the next week's forecast isn't getting any better. And then the following week's forecast, when we're back from Japan, it's even worse than that, of course. So I had to put the bike away into the garage and put the cover over it and say, okay, I'll see you in the spring, buddy. And sometimes Minnesota winter can last a really long time. So I had to wrap up the bike this weekend. And so, yeah, there it is. But you know what? That gives me something fun and outdoorsy to look forward to once the snow thaws. Or who knows, maybe I'll get like a wild hair up my ass and take it out on the ice and just, you know, do some crazy
on black ice or something. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, the brake
pedal again.
The what?
It said crack your brake pedal again.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah, the guy was like, what happened? I was like, oh, you know.
Someone attacked me.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I did this fucking sick ass slide thing. I was like, nope. Just tipped it over and fell into the neighbor's yard. Oopsie daisy. Anyway, so we are here to talk about the infamous 1999 movie Audition by Amari. Who's the director?
Takashi Miike.
Okay, awesome. And so this movie has like a somewhat infamous reputation. We'll kind of go into, is it a torture porn movie? Isn't it a torture porn movie? But we all knew it was going to be rough going in. I suppose we'll just give a brief synopsis for anybody who's listening that hasn't seen this movie. A no spoiler synopsis. So this guy is married, his wife dies, and then 7 years later, his son is like, Dad, you're lonely, you're bored, you're miserable, you should start dating again. And he's like, oh, okay. So he works in not a video editor, but like a producer. And he knows a guy who is like a casting director. So he and his casting director friend come up with some cockamamie scheme to audition a bunch of women that are in like the age range that he's kind of like interested in, or kind of like the type he's interested in. And then they're going to, you know, make up a movie that they're auditioning for. He's going to pick his favorite, and then he's going to like try to get into a romantic relationship, and the movie never really happens. So it, you know, obviously kind of a dishonest thing. He meets who he thinks to be the woman of his dreams, who is not quite as she initially appears to be, and events transpire from there. You know, we've talked before on the podcast about how sometimes the cover art of a movie that you're renting on iTunes can kind of give away the goat a little bit. The cover art of this movie is, Asumi is the woman's name, is her with like the leather glove with like the syringe in her hand. So if you didn't know what this movie was about going into it, you know, you might have gotten a hint that, like, you know, also this is rated R and for the first.
The Japanese cover actually has why I can't remember the main character's name, but it actually has like a black kind of like fade into it picture of him, and then it has some looped up wire.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, I think, a little bit less conspicuous. I mean, who knows? Like, who knows what the marketing of this movie was back in the 90s, like when it first came out, like when it was first being shown in Japan. Like, so what I would be really curious about.
I looked it up. I know what it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's hear it.
So the Omega Project had a lot of success with Ringu, which, you know, the ring that came out. Mm-hmm. They wanted to quickly try to hit on strike gold on that one, and ended up commissioning Audition. It's based on a novel. So it went to a couple film festivals in like Canada and a couple other places. Actually did really well with Western audiences, did really well with Japanese audiences, and was kind of never did the normal cult classic where people were like, this is terrible. Like, people loved it right off the bat. Thought it was awesome.
That's really interesting to know. Yeah, I kind of like wonder what the marketing, like, were there trailers for this movie, and like, what did they show and what did they not show and things like that. So what I would be really curious to know is, what did everybody know about Audition going into Audition? So Amari, what did you know ahead of time? First of all, was this your first time watching it?
This is my first time watching it.
Okay.
It's not my first time watching a Takashi Miike project, but this is my first time watching Audition. I knew a lot about its lore going into it. So I knew about some of the more hardcore scenes that are in it. I knew about its influence on other movies in the genre. New fun facts from behind the scenes. Like, it had a pretty minimal budget. It was only shot in like 3 weeks, stuff like that. So I knew the hype. I was ready to watch it. It was on my recommendations list, and I'm glad that we picked it. It was just as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Gideon?
Yeah, so like some years ago, maybe like 5 years ago, I had like listened to a podcast about this movie, basically forgot everything I heard, except for I vaguely remembered that the end was just kind of some kind of extreme scene. I didn't really know what happened. Didn't see a trailer or anything. And yeah, also my first time watch.
Interesting. Yeah, at the end, we'll get everybody's judge on, like, do we think this is a good, like, second date, third date? Obviously not a first date, but maybe a second date movie, right?
No.
All right, last but not least, Neil, what did you know going in, buddy?
Absolutely nothing, apart from you were, like, preemptorily apologizing to me. and like, telling me that I didn't have to show up for this episode.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. You know what? I would feel more apologetic if this movie wasn't so fucking awesome, but it is. Okay. Anyway. Yeah, so I knew basically verbs. Like, I knew things that happened in this. It was kind of like Bone Tomahawk. Like, everybody knows that in Bone Tomahawk, somebody gets scalped and then they get split, like, what do you call that? Your grundle. You know, up through their belly button. Like, I knew that bit about Bone Tomahawk going into it. I spent the whole movie like, okay, when's it going to happen? Then it happened, right? Audition, I knew that somebody was going to eat vomit. I knew somebody was getting a leg taken off. I knew somebody was getting needles stuck in them. I knew that there was a body in a bag, right? Like, that was kind of the big four, right, that I knew. And I kind of understood that it was about this woman that wasn't all that she purported to be, that she appears to be. So that's kind of where I started with it. So I think let's first go around and give our high level thoughts of, like, do we like it? Do we not like it? What do we like about it? Just a brief kind of thing. And then we'll get more into details and ask further questions and dive deeper into it. So back to you, Amari. Like, you already kind of gave away the go. This is something you really liked.
Yeah. This is something I really liked. I think it lived up to my expectations. I think because I knew a decent amount about it going in, I knew that it was a little slower to start, but it was definitely lived up to everything I was expecting it to. Would watch again. Would recommend to select people.
This is going to sound like a strange question. Do you think the first half of the movie was scarier or the second half of the movie was scarier?
I think the movie becomes scary about 45-ish minutes in. I think is when the movie starts to become scary. And I think that scary is a slow build.
Yeah.
I think 45 minutes are a love story, as fucked as that sounds. And then you get to a couple key moments where we learn something's a little up with Asumi, and then it becomes intense and it gives you like that rising tension that I think a lot of people look for in movies.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. We'll talk about that more in just a second. Gideon, high level thoughts.
Yeah, really enjoyed watching it, checking it out, going in pretty blind. I thought it was pretty good. I don't think it's like a new favorite. I would probably rewatch it, but after like a long while. And I really liked the way it was kind of like a slow burn and how it like slowly unfolded into the very intense finale, let's say. It almost feels like someone setting like a bear trap. Like very slowly, just like and even the first half, how it was just very romantic and this nice piano music and oh, we're going out, you know, we're gonna go on this little Airbnb trip and like as the nightmares progress and stuff, so there was a lot I enjoyed about this, yeah, and how it was constructed, I guess you could say.
Okay, interesting. I'll come back to you for when we're discussing which part is scarier. But Neil, I've been waiting for this all week, man. Let's hear it. How'd it go?
Yeah. I'm gonna say that. So this movie is just under 2 hours, I believe. I think it's like an hour 55, something like that.
Yeah.
And the first hour and a half of this movie is immaculate.
Yeah.
Like fantastic. Like great performances, great character writing, and like, you know, just so many like Chekhov's gun moments where like, okay, like why are they showing this? And then in that last 25 minutes, they tell you why they show you why they showed the other thing. Like it's just like put together so goddamn well. Mm-hmm. In particular, like I know a lot of this is done in editing, but I was surprised to find that they shot the movie in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, bang, bang, bang. And mm-hmm. somehow they got this out of, like, you know, like other movies are, like, in production for, like, years sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, to get, like, obviously this wasn't a, like, special effects heavy, except where it is. Yeah. But, like, I was very impressed with this.
Oh, Jesus, I just had something in my head and I forgot what it was. What it was going to be. Somebody fill time while I have a stroke on camera. Forgot what I was going to say.
Overall, did you like the movie? Last 30 minutes included?
Yes.
Awesome. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Neil, the movie that this reminded me the most of, and this might sound like a weird comparison, was House. Did you get that same? And not just because it's Japanese. I mean... Mm. The whole, like, when it was showing, like, the weird editing and, like, the dream sequences and, like, the out-of-order stuff that's going on, like, him having visions of, like, his deceased wife telling him not to go after Asumi or whatever. Some of that stuff was just, there was a few of those sequences and a couple of those shots that really kind of put me in the mind of House, that kind of, like, weird dream logic kind of thing.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Okay.
I feel like House is just like so out there. Like, yeah. I think there are some very like Japan-centric ideas and like thought processes in this, but like, I think this is entirely relatable. Like, not that I want somebody to like recreate it, but you could take like the basic script of this and make it into a Western movie.
Mm.
Like, I don't think you can do that for House without changing, like, fundamental things.
It's interesting. Yeah, so I gave away the goat a little bit earlier. I already said that I really liked it. You know things going into this movie, and you get the things that you're promised. Like, it delivers on being a horrific nightmare of a, you know, not quite torture porn, but, you know, leading in that direction. What I was not expecting was the, like, intricate character study on the quote unquote protagonist, and to find, like, such a human and weirdly relatable set of imperfections in, like, the lead character, right? Like, I wasn't expecting for this to be, like, such a parable and, like, such a movie with something to say. I thought it was really going to be more of just a popcorn, like, we're going to watch some fucked up shit happen. And it turned out to be so much more than that. And I'm so glad. So I asked earlier, like, do we think the first half was scarier or the second half? Something I want to talk about is that I think Asumi in this movie is so much more scary before we get to the final scene. Like, the final scene is hard to watch for, you know, a number of reasons, but I was never more scared in this movie than I was, like, when we've got the shot inside Asumi's apartment when we've never been there before, and she's sitting there near the phone waiting for it to ring, and it rings, and then she, like, smiles, and there's the bag in the background, and we know that there's something in the bag, and they don't show it. Like, nothing happens with that bag for, I think they show the apartment, like, two or three times. When that bag finally moved and it made that weird lion roar noise, that was the worst a jump scare has gotten me in maybe my entire life. Like, that was where I had to, like, I said, I'm pausing this. I'm going to finish this during the daylight tomorrow. I cannot watch this anymore.
Yeah, I think that in particular, like, the fact, you know, again, it's a case of show, don't tell. Like, towards the end, like, you might have an idea of what's in the bag. You know, just to reference them, what's in the bag? What's in the bag? but that shot of her just, like, staring, waiting for the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you cut to another scene where she's, like, on, like, a normal date with the protagonist, Ioma. Like,
yes, Ioma, that's his name.
That is scarier than, like, any creepy house, like, wandering through, like, you know, a creature running in the background that you see but the character doesn't. Like, what is she planning? Like, what the fuck is up with this character? We as the audience know something is wrong, and, like, it's like a high tier version of, like, look behind the door, bitch. Like,
oh, also, for the record, I think we do see Asumi's apartment. There is that scene where they're playing the ad, the radio ad.
Yeah.
And we see her, like, just sitting there, like, intently listening to that radio ad, where it's like, even Julia Roberts was a nobody before. And then you just, like I said, you see her, like, intently listening to it, and then we mimic that later in the movie where she's waiting for, like, a week for him to call.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is fun foreshadowing. Once you know that it's actually foreshadowing, it's great.
I'm gonna ask a very Amari-centric question here, guys, if that's okay.
Of course.
Is this movie a feminist parable? Like, I was reading into, like, the Wikipedia theme page on the movie, and it's like the themes expressed in this movie, like, some people think it's a feminist movie, some people don't think it's a feminist movie. Like, I would be curious to hear what your take is on that.
I think you could do a reading both ways. Ayama is a pretty misogynistic character. Like, he, in this, that's why, like, I give the quotes around protagonist, because he sucks. Mm-hmm. Like, he has this list of things that makes someone the perfect woman. They have to be meek, they have to be young, they have to, you know, all of these things where you're like, okay, that's your standard, is that it's all just bullshit, it doesn't actually make a person, which obviously comes back to bite him in the end when he meets Asumi and she ruins his life. I also could see it because Sumi ends up being a pretty powerful character as far as, like, this is a revenge porn movie, like, cutting off of, I'm gonna go into the grosser parts of the movie, the cutting off of her dance teacher's head after he, like, grossly asked Ayama, like, did you smell her? Like, he definitely gets hers. She's able to come in and be, like, take all this revenge against the men who have wronged her and the men that she perceives as wrong. Obviously, she's not the hero. So, she dies. So, there's obviously not, like, a satisfactory she is our protagonist. But I can see where you would read it both ways. Ultimately, I wouldn't categorize it as a, like, good for you, girl movie, but, like,
I can see where you would get it.
It's not Midsummer. Midsummer, where I'm like, hell yeah, good for you. It's not.
Yeah, you know the meme where it's like, it's like chopping a movie. It's like the movie poster, and it's like this much of the movie, and then that much of the movie is the meme. And the one from Midsummer is like, what the hell is this? And the last 10% is like, good for her.
Right? I don't feel like this is Carrie White where she's like getting her moment, but I do definitely see why people give it a feminist reading. And why people like the Sasuke sisters like base their character, which if you're not familiar with American Mary, it's about a female serial killer, where kind of get their female protagonist in it because she does have a lot of empowerment. It's misplaced to put it lightly, but she does get a lot of empowerment.
You know, Amari, I'm just looking for somebody in life that looks at me like Asumi looks at the little piano wire that she's working with on the foot, because she was loving it every minute of using that wire saw. It was like the happiest I have ever seen Asumi. She's at like a nice restaurant. She's kind of like, you know, she's at like a 4 or 5. She's using the wire saw. She's at an 11. She's losing her mind.
There's definitely moments where you can see her being a sympathetic character, as weird as it sounds. But there's a lot of depth in her character as well. You get to learn a lot about her being wronged up into the moment where, like, she obviously becomes the antagonist of the film.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I thought she was a pretty well fleshed out character.
Okay, that's interesting. Gideon, I have a special question for you. Do you think when Aoyama returned to work, do you think his buddy was like, dude, I told you? Do you think he had like the biggest I told you so of all time?
Oh, absolutely. He absolutely was like that. And he was just like, he probably just saw him wide-eyed. He's like, bruh, I tried to warn you, dude. Like, it's like, we had this whole list, you know, you're dead set on this one. I'm like, all right.
All right.
Look, every guy's been there. You know, your friend, like somebody you know is a psycho hose beast, but he can't see it. And we've all been there before.
I am deeply friends with a couple of the people in this chat. And I have for sure been like, that's not the one, but here we go.
Now, thankfully, nobody got their foot chopped off.
Oh, my God.
Or anything like this. Let's see. What else do we want to talk about in this movie, guys? Neil, I want to know a beat for beat of all of how this went for you with all the gross shit that happened. So I think the first really, like, intense scene you get is probably about, like, the 60% mark of the movie where we go into the apartment and we see what's in the bag. Walk me through this.
Well, I would say that it's not at the 60% mark.
But what is that, like 70, 75?
Yeah, I think okay. You need to go back to school for your math skills.
Okay. God damn, all right.
You know,
the first gross part, by the way, is I think when they start talking about when he goes to search for her after the hotel scene and he's talking to the guy in the bar about the bar being gone and you see the like tongue.
I was going to agree with Amari. Like, it's for a lot of times for me, it's those little things I found out after the fact, as I was going through the director's IMDb page. Number one, Sam, he has directed some adaptations of the Yakuza franchise as movies.
Sick. I'm in.
Secondly, he also appears to be like a working director. Like, he's not a Scorsese where he can just either he is not a Scorsese and has to like take work outside of like passion projects, or he has a very wide net of things that he likes. Cause there's such and such idol group. We made a movie and he's the director.
Sick.
But I was familiar with him from a movie called 13 Assassins, which I considered bringing to the podcast, but then I rewatched it and I was like, I love this movie, but it's not like, it was kind of like 1917, like not a great discussion movie. It's just going to be, the whoa factor on that is just like great, but you're not getting like strong character or,
So what was the first moment in the movie that set off your body horror alarm?
Probably
the tongue wiggling.
Yeah, the tongue wiggling.
Okay.
I think this movie is just like so strong in establishing the characters before you even meet Asumi. You get there's like this strong connection between Ioma and his son. Although I think this, just like pointing out those like weird, like Japanese cliches. Like, I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that I've watched the most anime of anybody in this group. And like the idea of widowed parent all of a sudden like comes home with like either very serious girlfriend / boyfriend, or, oh, hey, I got married over the weekend. Meet your new stepmom.
Mm.
It exists. I don't know why it exists. I don't think that it's a Western trope at all, but like, and then the fact that his son is like totally fine with it is in there as well. But I just think like they really establish Oyama, like who he is and like why he's getting into the situations that he gets into very well. And that's why I say that the first like hour and a half is immaculate. Cause I think like, even if you yourself wouldn't make the decisions he makes, you totally get why he's doing what he does.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I think he's a totally relatable and somewhat sympathetic protagonist, even though he is objectively doing the wrong thing. And during the audition process, you know, it starts to set off your ick alarm a little bit.
Yeah. And I this is one of those like Chekhov's gun moments where early on in the movie, there's that woman who like tells him she's getting married. It's like a surprise. And like, she's clearly expecting like something more than just like the bland congratulations he gives her.
Yeah.
And like she has like three scenes in the movie. It's that late in the movie she like tells him she's leaving to go get married, and then you find out why they've like had the scenes with her. And I on the one hand, some of the things that occur to him like during the, I wouldn't call it a dream scene, it's more like a fever hallucination. Yeah, but like if you choose to interpret them as like being truthful, then like I think that they were just really well done. During the audition process, it's almost like a speed montage of girls, and at one point like it doesn't linger on it, but like one girl like is stripping for them. I was like, what got them to this point in a 15-minute audition, because that's what's on their time sheet.
Female perspective, he sucks the entire movie. Mm-hmm. He seriously is just an asshole the entire movie. And maybe it's like the place that like where my brain is at that I think he's an asshole, but I think he's supposed to be an asshole the entire movie.
I don't know that.
Yeah,
like...
he talks to his like, I mean, and then like you said, you get to the hallucination sequence, and you get to all of these women that are like flashing in little like bits, like his housekeeper and obviously Asumi and one of the other girls from the audition, and you're like, you're a jerk the entire time. And it's not, look, no one deserves to get sewing needles in their eyeballs and their foot cut off with a wire saw. But again, another small moment of, you go, girl. Because he's not a sympathetic protagonist. I know you guys feel that he's like lovesick lover boy who is relatable in a little bit, but he's not a sympathetic protagonist. He ignores all reason whatsoever. His friend is like, we can't verify a single thing of this girl's background. He continues to find off shit about her. And the only thing he can think about is like, my dick is in it. Mm-hmm. And like, it gets his foot cut off. And almost his son killed. He sucks the whole time.
Yeah. And his dog killed.
And his dog. I know. I was watching with my dog and I was like, wait, close your eyes, girl.
Virgil is completely unsympathetic to the lives of dogs in movies. He was like, I'm glad the dog's dead. Yes, another one vanquished from the earth. We haven't heard from you in a while. Give me your, what was the thing you had the most visceral reaction to?
Oh man, definitely when you finally see what's in the sack, and I'm like, oh my god, is she actually vomiting in a bowl? And I'm like, oh my god, she's bringing it to him. And then you see like a piece of corn like fall out while he's like lapping it up. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is a lot right now. And yeah, so that really just was like, I was like, okay, I knew this was going to be extreme, but it's interesting in seeing which ways it like pulls it and just how it kind of messes with your expectations. Yeah. And yeah, I loved those dream sequences, like really getting into like his psyche and almost like his nightmares of like being confronted by that person at the office he had like a fling with or whatever it was. And I do think it's interesting, we haven't talked about it yet, but how like she does get her, you know, you go girl moment of just like killing this guy, but it's also like she is still a tragic and broken character because of all the abuse she suffered from what was her uncle that she lived with.
Yeah, there were like a couple different, or at least maybe I wasn't following the characters enough, but I think there were a couple different men in her life that she was victimized by, and 100% she is a broken character. Mm-hmm.
Even
the scene where the dance instructor takes the hot iron to her is just as cringy and hard to watch as any other scene in the movie, especially when you like the scenes where she's a little girl and it's happening, like that is disgusting. Yeah. And you get just as much, that's why I say you get just as much character development for Asumi as you do for Ayama, because yes, we know why Ayama is sad and wants to find this person that's never going to live up to his wife, but he's going to try anyway. But also you get a pretty good nature versus nurture on how the hell does this girl get to where she is? Like, oh, mm-hmm. She's been wronged 100 times over.
And even like the reasoning of like why she's cutting off the feet is like her mom was telling her with like the stepdad, right? And it's like, oh, a man needs a woman to rely on for support and all these things. And it's like, yeah, this is how she has seen just like relationships in her own life and how she's been treated. Just, it's crazy. It was very impressive on that part.
The part where she's sitting after she's put all the needles into his abdomen and she's sitting on top of him,
mm-hmm.
and she's putting them into the space beneath his eyes. She like tells him that once you experience excruciating pain, you'll actually realize who you are. Like, this girl is fucked. She cannot separate love and pain. They have to be the deepest of both emotions, and that is really scary.
Really, yeah, great. You know, the apparently the whole her saying kitty, 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 kitty is improvised.
Okay.
She did it like during a couple of the takes when they were like trying to get it right, and they ended up keeping it. Okay, here's a shot out of a cannon. You guys are gonna yell at me or say mean things to me about this, but here we go anyway. You know, for a lot of the movie, I was like, assume he was like very, very objectively beautiful. You know, and we're talking about like people on the screen, right? Like if any of us saw any actress or, you know, beautiful actor in real life, our heads would explode. You just don't see that kind of like person in daily life. But like him falling as like super head over heels for Izumi, at first I was kind of like, I was like, okay, I'm buying into this as far as the movie goes, but I don't really like get it, like him being that head over heels. And then as soon as she walked in like with the leather gloves and like the leather apron and everything, I was like, I get it now. Anybody else have that reaction?
No.
I knew the bad shit.
You're supposed to get it when he reads her essay about like experiencing pain and bringing.
No, I mean, yeah, but I just meant from like, yeah. I get that, but like from like the physical standpoint, I was like, yeah, she's very nice and she's very like, very elegant and very like beautiful. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't like dicks out for Harambe on this girl until she had the leather gloves and the and all the stuff on. I was like.
Well,
one hard bullshit, but I'll let you go. I'll let this one pass.
One thing is that she always wears white throughout the movie. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that white is the color associated with death in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that she like walks into the audition that first time and she's wearing pure white, I think is meant to trigger warning bells for you, but as a Western audience, it isn't quite there for us. But go ahead, Amari.
I was gonna say, I think it's kind of fun as a Western audience because we see white as purity.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of adds to her. I mean, there was a comment earlier of how did we get to like her stripping. They are asking about sex to 90% of the girls that are walking in. Again, just another like, you guys are curvy and weird. Mm-hmm. And I sort of get that it's supposed to be like, oh, this is for a movie, there might be a sex scene, but like stop trying to suss out who's gonna fuck on the first date. Like, ew, gross.
Yeah, I was kind of confused by that a little bit. Like, I don't mean to stereotype because I probably don't know what I'm talking about, but I would have assumed Japanese society was so much more buttoned up than that. Like, the things that they were asking just seemed like so out of line with what I previously thought to understand about the culture. Like, they were, and like some of the things, like I remember having a weird reaction to like some of the questions that were asked in the audition, but I don't remember specifically what they were.
I think it's just because the whole thing is just like, just like total deception on their part, right? Like, they're just like,
yeah,
he's like, this is bullshit anyways, let's just get you a freak. No,
yeah,
next,
right? Yeah,
like,
let me see them titties. No,
we
next.
See the girl. We see the girl later.
Yeah, okay, you tried to kill yourself two times. Okay, next. Like, it's like they clearly don't give a shit.
Yeah, like, well, and like some of the things that she was revealing about her, assuming it was revealing about herself, like even on their first couple of dates, I was like, okay, I just don't know, right? It's like, I don't know what the line is in Japanese culture about like what you're going to share and what you're not going to share. Like, I mean, obviously this is an edge case because he's like in love with this girl and she's nuts, but you know, it was just that some of that stuff struck me as strange. I didn't think of it in terms of like, oh, this is good for the movie or bad for the movie. It just struck me as kind of strange in the moment. What else do we want to go into on this? What do we want to touch on? I feel like we've barely touched on the last 20 minutes. And
say, are we ready,
like,
to ask, is this torture porn?
I think it is. I think it elevates itself above torture porn by being so awesome. and being like about more than that, you know. But I'm curious to hear what you think as well.
I think that you have to take into context the time period that it was made. So it's in the 90s, it's in the late 90s. We haven't at this point seen some of the genre defining torture porn movies yet. We haven't seen Hostel or Saw or any of those movies. We haven't seen American Mary or Two Hookers in a Car, or Two Hookers in a Trunk is what it's called. We haven't seen any of those movies that were made to push the boundary of what we'd seen on screen and what we will continue to see on screen. So yeah, I think it's torture porn. I think it's a beautiful movie. I think a lot of people wouldn't consider it torture porn by today's standards, but I think for 1999, it's a pretty rough shit. You watch a man's foot get cut off with a wire saw. A wire saw hits the bone, goes boing, and spirals up. That's pretty fucking gross. You see a man eat a bowl of vomit.
Yeah, that was the bit for me.
That part, I didn't watch it. I put my phone like up to the screen to be like, no.
Yeah.
Because that will always make me binge.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think to not give it its kudos is a mistake, especially because people who are notably torture porn people, like Eli Roth, has a cameo of Takashi Miike in Hostel. If any of you have ever seen the film or are familiar, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. But there's a scene in the beginning where the kids are going into the hostel and a guy walks out. He's like wearing sunglasses and a hat, and he's like, you'll spend all your money in there. And like, he's very much so like a satisfied customer, and they're like, what? And you walk in and that's Takashi Miike, and it's a nod to Audition and a nod to Ichi the Killer.
That's awesome.
It's also a disgusting movie.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind going first, because I have a longer thought.
Sure. What was the question again?
Is this torture porn?
I mean, definitely the last, you know, the climax of the movie, you could call it that for sure. I saw the words extreme cinema being thrown around. So maybe this is like the perfect intro to a heavier, more violent type of movie that you might not have seen. I think just the way it's so finely crafted, it does feel like this crazy spring-loaded trap. And I almost could have had, I feel like they could have pushed it even more at the end, but especially for 1999, I do think, like Mara was saying, it feels like a landmark title and like maybe a turning point for that kind of horror.
Okay. Neil, how about you? Is this torture porn?
I'm actually going to say no. I think that this is torture tasteful nudity. Before we actually settled on this, I was actually considering being brave and was going to consider proposing that we watch Saw, which I've never seen. Ooh. But that, you know, that has a big implication a big amount of baggage that comes with it. But it's my understanding that that first movie is actually like saying something, and then after that it becomes torture porn.
Yeah.
Whether it's abruptly in two or it just keeps getting progressively worse. Similarly, I saw that Eli Roth and Rob Zombie have cited this movie as a major influence. Eli Roth just makes me angry as a human being, honestly.
Why?
Have you seen Green Inferno?
No.
I heard about Green Inferno.
Actually, I've seen bits and pieces of Green Inferno. I didn't finish it. I got to the part where Anton Yelchin like has his arm broken. That was pretty rough.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it, but again, that's torture porn. The Green Inferno is torture porn. And, like, to me, it's just like Rob Zombie and Eli Roth, like, you clearly, like, you watch the same movie and you learn something, but it's not what we wanted you to learn. You're like Charlie Day and It's Always Sunny. Like, he thinks that he's learned a lesson at the end of the episode, and he's learned the wrong lesson. To me, this is if we're going to talk about just porn, like, you know, like, typically most people aren't watching, like, the sex scenes in Game of Thrones and, like, whipping out their dick and jacking it to it.
Speak for yourself, you know. Continue.
Sam, you haven't even watched Game of Thrones.
I have not.
But
you don't know what his browser history is.
Just the scenes.
Yeah, like I'm not saying that those are, like, totally tasteful and, like, great. Like, I'm sure we could bring up some artsy fartsy movie where there's like softcore sex that's happening. But, like, that's not the point of that movie. That's not, like, what we're really here for. Similarly, like, you know, compared to going to some X-rated website, this, like, again, that first hour and a half justifies the last 25 minutes to me, where, like, it becomes, like, a body horror movie, but like, the point of it wasn't just to get to seeing Alma get his feet sawn off. Whereas, like, movies like the Saw sequels and the Green Inferno and all kinds of other stuff, like, they'll have, like, one of those gross scenes in the first 20 minutes of the movie because they know that that's what the audience came for. They didn't come here for, like, the discussion of, oh, is this a feminist movie, Amari? No, it's because they wanted to see a guy get his foot sawn off.
I think you are missing the point of some of those movies. I think that Eli Roth and Rob Zombie think that they are pretty edgy and they do like to push the envelope pretty hard. I think for 2005, I think Hostel is a great commentary on capitalism and on greed and on classism.
Okay, like, and for I have
for as gross as it is, and it is by far one of the grossest movies that I've sat through, I think it has a satirical and, I mean, it's not going super deep into the ideas of classism or anything like that, but I think it does make a commentary on that. I think Eli Roth did get the point of Audition, and I think he is always trying to push the envelope on what is horror and what people can understand. I do agree. I think Rob Zombie is a shitty movie maker and a shitty musician. But I do think that they got it. I think it just, like a lot of genre films, is not gonna hit the mark for everyone. And I think this one is pretty light, and I think it's perfect for someone like yourself who doesn't have a taste for body horror and, like, mutilation.
So I'm just to counter that, like, I haven't seen Hostel, so I can't comment there. Maybe Eli Roth is better than I give him credit for. Maybe Rob Zombie is better than I give him credit for. But, like, I do feel like, so maybe those move into the, like, maybe this is less torture porn and that's being mixed in with some kind of thematic element that is worth discussing. But I do feel like there's a distinction, but I feel like there is a line somewhere that says this is, we're saying something and we're capping it off with, like, this gut-wrenching scene and then, like, Saw 37.
I agree with you. I, as someone who's seen quite a few of the Saw movies, they for sure lose their fun. Lose their plot. I think that happens to a lot of long drawn out franchises. I think that happens to a lot of horror movies. I think a lot of people go to horror movies expecting the audacious. They're expecting them to be gross and jumpy and make you want to jump out of your skin, whether that be from a jump scare or whether that be from some sort of body horror. I think audition gets the benefit of never needing to go there. I also think it gets the benefit of time. And while I absolutely thought that this was a great movie, I do think it's in the 70s, you didn't see a lot of the ridiculous shit that you see in porn today. I think in 1999, you don't see a lot of the things that Audition brought, and I think that's why people regard it as such a gross film, but why people are hesitant to call it a torture porn film, because it doesn't really live up to the standards of what we have now. Like I mentioned earlier, I went and saw Terrifier 3 this Halloween season. That is grotesque for grotesque's sake. The plot is fucking terrible. It's not saying anything worthwhile. You are going so that you can see a dude dressed in a creepy clown costume cut someone from ass to throat. Like, it's gross, and it's funny. He is kind of a funny character, but I think that sometimes torture porn can say something. And I think that Audition is torture porn that says a little something.
I agree that, you know, the analogy that I kind of gave to Grace, because she was like, I'm not watching this movie, but give me the broad strokes. And what I said was that it is a movie that, like, it's like the high class meal version of a torture porn movie, right? It, like, it does it beautifully. It does it perfectly. And then at the very end for your dessert, it's like, here's all the candy and all the popcorn and all the junk food you want, like, packed into the last 20 minutes. Like, here you go. You made it through our really artful dissection of this thing. Now let's cap it off with this, like, celebration of violence at the end. And I don't know. I thought it was a great way to construct it. You know, like, I knew what was coming, and, you know, I made it through the rest of the movie and thought it was so much better than I was expecting it to be. And then it got to that last 20 minutes. And I was like, you guys have earned this last torture scene. I'm here for it. Let's do it. And it was great.
I think so too. I think it's fun. I think the last 30 minutes qualifies as a bit of torture porn. Cause she takes a lot of revelry in the things that she's doing more than maybe like some of the gross, but quick kills that you get in some slashers that came before it. Mm-hmm. One of the worst horror movie deaths that comes to my mind is Friday the 13th Part 1, Kevin Bacon scene where he gets the slow arrow pushed through the back of his neck, like up through his chest. That's fucking mm-hmm. gross.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really... Yeah,
shout out to Tom Savini, who we've discussed in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Tom Savini, what a master. But I mean, what he's brought to the table is phenomenal. But yeah, I think the slow build of this movie and the delight that our character gets in it, and also the fact that it's a pretty, I mean, even though it's only 30 minutes out of the 2-hour movie, it's a pretty drawn out portion of watching her just torture this dude. Also, for the record, we haven't talked about it, and it is just as unnerving to me as some of the other scenes in the movie that get, like, a lot of hype, like the wire saw. When Ayama's son kicks her down the stairs, and she... One quick shoehorn. The way she flies down the stairs is fucking hilarious. I played it back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so hard. Yeah. But her neck being broken like that and her swallowing and you watching it like start to bruise and like
that was pretty gnarly. One of the things in that final scene, not her flying downstairs, made me laugh, was like when the son came in, he was like, "Dad, are you okay?" I was like, "What?" Like, he's missing a foot, he's got needles sticking out of his eyeballs. Clearly your dad is not okay. get on the phone and call, you know. And then she's like chasing him with the
Yeah.
So great.
And he's like, what are you doing? Why are you here? It's like, we're past that, buddy. Okay.
Who are you?
It's like, maybe you should have spent so much time, you know, collecting these dinosaur figurines. Maybe.
I thought the dinosaur thing was going to come back. Not like a Chekhov's gun. I didn't think like a T-Rex was going to come through the window or anything. But I meant like, I thought the dinosaur was going to play into things a little bit more. Like, I got to the end of the movie and I was like, but what about the dinosaurs? Like, I thought that was going to lead to something.
Maybe I'm trying too hard to be a film buff and a little film critic here, but I did think that the conversation that they had when the son is like, how come you won't get a remarry in the beginning of the movie where he like, they're eating the fish and he's looking at it and he's like, did you know it takes 13 weeks to figure out like what this fish will be, whether it'll be like a man or whether it'll be man. And he's like kind of scraping it. I was saying to myself, I was like, is this all going to take course over like 13 weeks until you find out who like Asumi is? And I don't know that the timeline did. I didn't follow it that strongly, but I was like, that's definitely a nod to him not knowing who she is.
Yeah.
Until later.
And he says the iconic line, I don't know much about ovaries.
I was like, no, you don't.
You know, me neither. And I learned, speaking of the female anatomy, I learned this week that I have been using the wrong shampoo or the wrong body wash. Great.
Elaborate.
Because Grace came in and she's like, have you been using the body wash in the green bottle? And I was like, yes. I saw it said body wash on it. She's like, did you read more carefully? And I was like, no. She's like, well, your pH level should be excellent. It seemed like normal body wash to me. I don't know. It was doing the job, you know. I'm just very pH balanced this week, I guess. So, guys, we are. I don't want to say we have a time limit, but we're kind of approaching that hour mark, that sweet spot. So, speak now or forever hold your peace on anything we want to wrap up and say about Audition before we get to scores.
I wanted to shout out the music, some of the shots, especially as it kind of descends more into madness and we get more of these like off-kilter shots and weird colored skies and just stuff like that, adding all the more to the nightmarish nature of the second half.
The editing.
Yeah, and the edit. The edit was excellent, yeah. Very really, good. Really liked it.
Mari, any final thoughts?
Other than when we get to scoring, no. I really can't say enough about how much I thought that this was a really fun watch. I thought that the characters were good. I thought that the acting was great. Mm-hmm. Everyone really brought a great performance to it. And I can see why this is such a well-revered movie and why people think it's Takashi Miike's kind of big ticket piece, because it's a really good movie.
That's good. Neil, any final thoughts? Are you just going to say fuck you guys for bringing me in here?
No. I think I'm ready just to get to the ratings.
Okay, let's hear it, man. What are you going to give it?
I think I have to give it a 5.
Yeah.
And I never want to watch it again.
Yeah. I told Grace I'd watch it with her, but I'm not watching it alone. That's never happening. Gideon, how about you, buddy?
I know we aren't doing the halves, but this was basically like a 3.5 for me. But it's mostly personal preference. I like haven't really ever wanted to watch Saw for similar reasons. I've heard it's good. I've heard it's got a good plot and everything. But I've just been like deathly like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. But I was similarly about that way with Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Love that. I just watched it for the first time a couple weeks ago. Gave it a 5. I totally get why people like this movie. I do think it's well constructed. It feels like a lightning in a bottle like movie for like this kind of horror. Especially I didn't know it was shot in such a short time like that. It really doesn't feel like that because it feels so well crafted. So more so just on my personal preference, I guess it would be a 3. It's not quite like a 4 for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, 3 out of 5.
All right, cool. Amari, you know, I'll let you go last tomorrow. I'm going to give it a 5 as well. I thought it was just totally brilliant. It's like everything I want from a horror movie. I felt like I had lightning in my blood at the end of this movie. I was like doing it. I was like playing Katamari Damacy to try to calm down, and I was like shaking a little bit. I could feel like my heart rate was still like kind of elevated. And, you know, I always talk about, like, I'm interested in 10s and 2s. Like, I want to be like emotionally hurt by a movie in like one way or another, and this is definitely one of those movies that, like, it just makes you feel so much, you know. What more can you ask for, you know? For like, I want to go to the movies, I want something to be memorable, and I want it to affect me, and boy is this memorable, and it did affect me. So yeah, 5-star for me. You know, it's like an impossible movie to recommend. Mm. You know, unless you like really know somebody. you can't be at work and be like, yeah, I watched Audition this weekend, you know, you should check it out, but you're gonna get like pulled into HR over it or something. But
yeah, for real.
Anyway, Amari, how about you?
I will probably give this a 4. It was not my perfect movie, but it was damn good, and I would definitely recommend this to someone, with the caveat that the end is squeamish. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought it was really good. It also, I probably should have said this in my final thoughts, but it also leaves me like interested in reading the novel that it was adapted from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's... Yeah, I didn't know that before this, and so I'm also very interested in that. Something I also read about this movie, and apparently they talk about it in the director's commentary, the vomit is real.
Bruh, what? That is fucked up, dude. I did not know that.
Apparently, the guy in the bag is like this Japanese, like super method actor. And
what the fuck?
How much? I know.
That's disgusting.
I know. It's one step further than my man Nick Cage eating that cockroach 3 times in Vampire's Kiss, where he actually ate the cockroach. But yeah, the dog bowl of vomit is. That's going on my wall of fame for like method actors doing crazy shit.
Do you want to know a fun fact that you triggered in my brain from the cockroach thing in Vampire's Kiss? Did you know Todd, the guy in Candyman, put a rider in his contract where he would get like $2,000 for each bee sting that he got from that scene where all of them are coming
out? I heard about that.
Made an additional $26,000 on that film.
That's damn.
Awesome. We're actually having a mouthful of bees.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's pretty the dedication. Oh my god. I cannot wait to transition into Nick Cage November for the second year in a row. Awesome.
I think we should shout out the costuming. She's so dripped the fuck out when she's on her dates, dude. That red coat, I was like, damn. Yeah, I was like, that is, dude, cool factor off the chain with this right now. And then, like you had mentioned, and, you know, not naming names, but I can see with the iconic scene when she's in the leather and everything, a lot of people are like, fetish unlocked, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
oh, yeah.
Dangerous sure. Woman in leather. That could be
right. Yeah. Well, and I'm a big sucker for like watching Japanese office workers in the late 90s, like with their big CRT monitors and they're just like chain smoking and stuff. I'm like, this is awesome. I love that shit. All right. Well, now I get to be, now every time I walk down a weird flight of stairs into an abandoned bar in Shinjuku next week, I get to be fucking scared for my life. So that'll be hopefully I don't, you know. And hopefully nothing bad happens to me while I'm there.
I think we learned an important lesson about not objectifying women and about how you have to get to know a person before you start.
That's true. I certainly felt, you know, like I said, I felt like kind of like Scrooge and the Ghost of Christmas Future kind of thing. You know, you try to learn lessons from watching other people's mistakes and not making those mistakes yourself. I certainly saw this guy make some mistakes. You know what I mean? I was like, you know, I was taking notes the whole movie. Let's put it that way. All right. Well, Neil, do you guys have a movie picked out for next week while I'm gone?
I think so.
So I had an idea, and I would actually like to expand on it a little. If Gideon, are you up for a double feature?
Yeah, for sure.
So I know we're into November, but we want to kick that off with Sam properly. So I would like to propose two DreamWorks movies. One that's like, it didn't kill the studio, but it like put the studio on its butt for a while. And one that's doesn't get the love it deserves.
Okay.
And so in no particular order, I would like to propose watching The Road to El Dorado.
Hell yeah.
And Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. I don't think I've seen either of those since I was like 10 or under. Yeah. And I don't even know if I ever watched Sinbad all the way through.
Gideon, do you remember at your third grade birthday party where we all watched Treasure Planet?
Oh, yeah, dude.
I remember.
How could I forget?
It was awesome. Birthday.
That was so fun, dude.
Yeah, it was awesome. All right. Well, awesome. Have a great week next week, guys. I'll be excited to see how everybody does with hosting. Please let me know if you need help getting the Craig to record the podcast and everything. I'll show you the ropes and
cool.
Yeah, we'll get it all sorted out. Just message me if you have any questions. Amari, it was great having you on.
Yeah, thanks.
Feel free text me anytime you have a good idea for a movie. Bring on the podcast and we'll work it in. We love having extra people here. I think there might be some Helldivers tonight after the podcast if anybody is interested. Thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks for having me. This is super fun.
Yeah, peace out, guys.
Thanks for coming. Later, guys. Yeah,